Brett is the college director of The Quest out at Bel Air Presbyterian Church near Los Angeles, California, and his church is actually pretty influential in the media area. Rhett writes on his blog at rhettsmith.com, where he addresses in specific issues relating to the emerging church and Christian theology, especially as it pertains to the youth culture. If you read his blog, he often reviews books and different articles related to that topic. Rhett has just completed his Master's of Science and Marital and Family Therapy at Fuller Theological Seminary. He is a graduate of Fuller Theological Seminary, where he also attained his Master's in Divinity. Please welcome with me, Rhett Smith.
Thank you, sir. How's everyone doing? It's a little weird, honestly, being up here while you guys are all sitting out there. I'm used to working with kids, and so I'm kind of like down, engaged with them. So we'll see how this goes. And I'm going to hook this up real quickly here. I guess I should have done this before. Just give me a second here. Yeah. Actually, can Paul come up here and hook this up for me? The funny thing is, I'm speaking on the Facebook and MySpace stuff, and I'm the least technical person you'll probably ever meet. So I'm actually going to address today basically kind of a practical, theological, philosophical way to approach how we do ministry to Facebook and on these online social network sites and working in youth ministry. Because I will tell you that what I'm going to give you to you today is not the same position I held about 6 months to a year ago. I've completely switched my whole view on what it means to do ministry in Facebook and on these online social network sites. And what I want to do for about 15 to 20 minutes is kind of just address some key specific ideas. And then I want to open up the room actually to some discussion, hopefully, for the remaining time, 15 to 20 minutes. And I'd love to get some of your feedback and ideas and opinions, because one of the things that I'm finding out is that things are changing way too fast and way too quickly. And as soon as I hop on Facebook, I realize that my college kids are going to a whole other site. And so trying to keep up to these different forms of media in church or youth ministry is a very difficult thing. And so I'd like to, you know, maybe talk with you about some things. And one of the things as I'm talking to you, I'm thinking about, you know, just my cell phone here. My kids do not send me an email anymore. Almost everything that they do is through a text message or is on Facebook. And so I've had to kind of change how I do ministry and how I, you know, talk with them. And so hopefully, as we kind of address some of these issues, it'll be stirring up some ideas in you. You'll probably have some things that you think are good and that you agree with. You probably have some things that you disagree with, and I'd like to get your feedback on that as well. Because as I said, about 1 year ago, I just came to this whole complete new idea of what it means to do ministry. And I'm going to do something that probably is very old school, especially when we're talking about issues at this conference, is I want to pass out a handout, actually. Because I still like having things in my hand. So I'm going to pass this. Can one of you just distribute this? And basically, it's just five areas that I kind of want to address, and I have a certain question that maybe I would like you to think about in how we approach ministry in the Facebook MySpace generation. And then I have some also books that I recommend for reading that I think are helpful resources and raise some good questions about what it means to enter into this new area. One of the very first things that I did when I became the college pastor about 6 years ago at Bel Air was I went out and I found the best website designer I could find to create a website for our college ministry, because I realized that the content hadn't changed in about a year and a half to 2 years. And so, as you can imagine, nobody was going to the website. It had no meaning to them in their lives. And so I thought I did this great thing. I went out and found this, you know, top-of-the-line web designer, and he created this great website. And I figured what I wanted was college students to come online, and I wanted them to engage in discussion and to post articles and to post their artwork. And, you know, that was good for probably 5-6 months. And I started to look at the traffic, and I started to realize that the traffic actually was starting to decline. And so I was realizing that it didn't matter that I had a website. That wasn't working. It wasn't. It was just basically a page for people to look out, to go to, and find out what time does a college group start at. But it wasn't going to create this community that I was looking for online. And so over the last couple years, I started to hear this thing about these online social networks and MySpace specifically. And I was like, I don't know. I don't know if I like this whole MySpace thing. Because my biggest fear as a pastor was I couldn't control any of the content that was being posted on the sites, especially with students. If you're working with young kids, it's quite amazing what they will post about themselves or their lives. And you know, if you're working in a church setting, there's this fear about, you know, what you have on their site and what that says about your church community or your college group. And so I would say for the last 2 to 3 years, I kind of was the ostrich with my head buried in the sand, and I'm like, no, I'm not going to go to MySpace. I'm going to go back, and I'm going to look at our website, and I'm going to create these online forum boards and discussions, and I'm going to pull these students away from these online sites, and they're going to come to our college website, and it's going to be this great online community. And it didn't happen. I mean, zero traffic to our website, zero discussion on our online forums. And so I was like, all right, I'm finally going to give in. I don't know if that was the right thing to do, but I'm like, I'm going to create a page on MySpace for our college ministry. And so I remember going to the site, and I opened up, and I created this page, and it was basically pretty simple at that point. And, you know, just some basic information about our group. And I remember going to our college group about 2 to 3 days later, and we kind of each week have new people stand up, introduce themselves. And there were three new people who stood up, and I'm like, how did you find our group? They're like, well, we saw your Facebook page. I mean, your MySpace page. And it's like, oh, okay, this thing is actually pretty effective. People are actually online. And so that's where we began. We had this MySpace page. And what happened over the last year as we had this page is that the content did get a little bit out of control, and you couldn't control some of the dirty ads that were appearing, the different things that were happening. And so one of my students went and created a Facebook page. And as I'll address this later, one of the things about doing ministry in this generation is they do things without asking. They no longer have to go through the same authority or through the same channels, you know, that you used to have to go. They no longer have to come to me, the pastor, to create a bulletin or content. And so a bunch of my college kids, they went and created a Facebook page for our college ministry, and that was up and running. And it took me a while to kind of come around to see how that was effective. And if you have the handouts, one of the things I kind of want to address is just maybe your online, what is your personal journey online? Because I think your experience online is going to form what you think about Facebook and MySpace and these other things. For me, I talked about having this website and that wasn't working, so I came to this place. And one of the things that I think we have to realize if we're working with youth is that this is their world. You're working with people who have grown up with the internet always in their lives. They don't know of a world that exists outside of the internet and getting online. And so you kind of have to step back from your own experience and realize, what is it like to work with kids? You know, what would it be like if I put myself in their shoes? And recently I was talking to a bunch of parents at Bel Air in the junior high school ministry. You know, I'm discussing this issue. That's my new daughter who's 3.5 months old. I kind of felt guilty coming away out of town and actually sleeping good in a hotel last night as my wife was home doing the late night feedings. So if you can, put yourself in the shoes of, you know, kids or high school kids or junior high school kids or people, you know, age 18 to 25. They've always been able to go online for the most part and work in this area with online social network. And what I want to do today is do a couple things. Look at some practical, just kind of hands-on tools and kind of some philosophical tools as well. Sorry, I'm a little scattered up here trying to... Where's the wireless feed up here? Isn't it? Yeah. So basically, what is your online journey? How has that informed, you know, whether or not you want to be on Facebook or MySpace? And as you see in this handout, I basically asked that question because I think it's important. And as I said, my whole view has changed over the last year what I think about Facebook and MySpace. And I've basically come to the realization that I think it's one of the best things in the world as far as what's happening in our ministry, in high school and junior high ministry and college ministry. Now, it's not without its risks, but I think the benefits totally outweigh. And I kind of give an example. As I flew into Vegas last night, you know, a lot of people ask, why are we doing this Christian conference in Vegas? And, you know, as people mentioned before, I mean, I think that we as Christians need to be out in the world. And I started thinking about that in terms of Facebook and MySpace. I had the option to either kind of bury my head in the sand and say, I'm not going to be a part of Facebook or these other online social networks, but all my kids were going to be on there, you know, anyways. So I could either stay on the sidelines and have no impact at all in their lives, or I could decide to join in their network and hopefully transform their culture. One of the second things as we move from online journey is just kind of basically in the shaping of their identity. You know, I was doing some research the other day, and I kind of want to basically thank you, run some numbers by you. I looked at the top websites that are used in the world, and this was their ranking. Yahoo was number one, Google is number two, YouTube was number three, Windows Live was four, MSN was five, six was MySpace, and seven was Facebook, and that's the entire world. If you look at the U.S., it goes Yahoo, Google, MySpace, YouTube, Facebook. And so we have to realize that of all the top sites that are visiting the world, Facebook and MySpace are up there, usually in the top five. And so that does a lot in shaping the identity of the kids we use. Just recently, I looked at the latest statistic. There are 107 million users on MySpace right now, and there's 78 million on Facebook. And Facebook, it seems to be catching up and growing quite a bit. So if we look at the statistics and we look at some of the articles coming out in Newsweek and stuff, you know, it says the average student, average person can spend anywhere from a half hour to 3 or 4 hours a day on Facebook. So if you imagine you're spending 4 hours a day on Facebook or MySpace, that's going to shape your identity to some degree. And so the question, as we wrestle with what it means to do ministry in a Facebook, MySpace generation, is how is it shaping their identity, and what kind of people are they becoming? And this is, I think, especially challenging when we're working in churches, when, you know, you're working with a kid in person or an adult, you know, because there's plenty of adults on MySpace and Facebook, and you have this idea of who this person is, and then you go online and you see a completely different person online that is represented than the person that you see in person. And so you almost have like two lives. And so some of the challenges and issues that come up in ministry is who is the real person, and how do we integrate people to live these whole lives and not have this online personality that does things that they wouldn't, you know, normally do in person. And one of the questions I ask you as people who are working with youth or young adults is, you know, when a person is in these communities for hours a day, how do we help shape and transform their identity, whether it's online or the time that we get with them? I want to give you a couple examples here and how maybe it shapes their identity and how you get these kind of two split personalities. You know, I work in a college ministry. I have a bunch of great kids that I love. I don't think I'm naive. I kind of know what goes on in their world a little bit, you know. But then I go online on Facebook after Halloween, and I see all the photos they've posted or the crazy outfits or the drunken parties they've gone to. And it's quite shocking and appalling. And so the question becomes to me as a pastor, how do I work with these students that I get only an hour to two each week to work with sometimes, and are living these completely different lives and being quite bold online, you know? And so you have that issue. And what happens when one of your great leaders or pastors or elders or deacons or Bible, you know, Bible Sunday school teachers in your church is doing all this stuff in your community, and then you go online and you see their profile, and it's completely different or completely shocking. And so we have to realize the time they spend online is shaping their identity. They have thousands of voices that are informing who they are, that are you know, asking them to be a part of events or groups or be in dialogue with. And so we as pastors or as workers with youth or young adults only get sometimes a couple of hours a week, but they're online, you know, anywhere from sometimes 10 hours to 20 hours a week. And that's hard to compete with when you have thousands of voices telling them who they should be or what kind of person they should be. And that's one example. Or sometimes you hear only about the bad things in Facebook or MySpace, but I think about the good things I see in my students. I see, you know, college kids going online and starting out, you know, outreach projects in our community and getting people to go serve in Los Angeles, in our city. We have a girl in our college group who's struggling with cancer, and I see kids going online and starting prayer groups and praying for this person. And so there's kind of this balance of both, you know? But when they spend that much time online, there's this idea kind of that it's not just us in the church that is shaping their identity, but they're getting their identity is being shaped by this online culture, and it's hard to compete with. The third movement that I wanted to address is this idea of leading within. And the question I ask at the front is, how does you or your church's leadership style contradict or correlate with youth in a MySpace Facebook world? One of the things completely different about Facebook and MySpace is that there is no hierarchy. Al Mohler earlier talked about that, you know, there is no gatekeeper. So imagine what that's like. For me, example, I work in a PCUSA church, and a student comes to me and they have a great idea for an event. And I say, that's a great idea, but, you know, I got to talk to the elders first and then the deacons and the session, and then we got to get that approved, and then maybe your idea will work. Or they can go home that night, hop online on Facebook, create a group, invite people, and within that week actually make that happen in action, in person. There's no hierarchy. There's no red tape. And one of the challenges, I think, for us working with youth and young adults is that our leadership style has to change in many degrees. Like, we can no longer be these people who kind of lead on top from a place of just authority, and because, you know, I'm the college pastor, what I says go. But I've had to learn how to shift my leadership style where I'm a pastor who leads within the community. And that was the biggest challenge for me. I decided that, like I said, I could either stand on the sidelines while all my kids were on Facebook and MySpace, or I could enter into their midst and be a part of their group and hopefully lead as a pastor within. And so there's this really flattening of hierarchy in the Facebook MySpace generation. And I'm starting to see in our own church, there's this tension building as some of the generational issues are coming to head, you know, with the younger generation and some of the older generation in our church. And I think a lot of that has to do with online social networking, where they are completely empowered to go online and to have a voice and to feel like they are valuable. Whether or not anyone is reading what they're saying, they at least can get their voice heard and have content. And so one of the things about Facebook and MySpace is there's no hierarchy. You can create your own content. There are multiple users. So, for example, as I'm going to show in a few minutes, I've created this Facebook page for our college ministry, and I've allowed as many people in the group to add content to the page. Anyone in our group can add content. Anyone can say anything they want, and that gets a little tricky and messy when you have a couple hundred kids in college who can add to the conversation. And so one of the things I said, as mentioned, is think about the churches you're working in, the organizations you're working in, the ministries you're working in. How would that ministry or organization maybe bump heads with what's going on in online social networking? Or is it a good fit? Are you comfortable with this idea that people can go on and say whatever they want and that lots of people have a voice and that there's really no person to answer to online? Or is that uncomfortable? So that's one of the challenges, I think, to think about. The fourth thing, I like to use this term of intermingling lives. And the question is, does the exposure of a student's lives intimidate or discourage or inspire you to want to engage with them online? Why or why not? And as I mentioned at the top, one of the fears about being online is that you can't control the content, that you can't control who you're associated with. Someone can ask to come online and, you know, click to be my friend, and I could say no, you know, or I could say yes, you know, it doesn't matter. But eventually, this web just grows, and you're just a few clicks away from some content that is quite disturbing to you. And so the question I think we have to ask ourselves is, how comfortable are you being associated with certain things online? And I think that was one of the main things that kept me for about a year or two from actually getting online with my students, is because, you know, I'm a college pastor, I have a certain, you know, reputation to uphold in the community, and I can't be associated with certain things. You know, and so I had this kind of arm's distance length from my kids, and I started to realize, and I started to reflect, and I started to think about, really, where would Jesus want me? And I started thinking about some of the gospel stories of Jesus sitting down with the tax collectors, you know, and the sinners at a meal, or talking to people in public he wasn't supposed to talk in public with, or about us being in Vegas, you know, maybe when we're supposed to be back at Biola, some people say. And I started to realize, I think Jesus wants me in the midst of my students, no matter how messy it gets. And so that was a huge step for me to realize that once I got online, I couldn't control content. I couldn't control who became my friend or who was a friend of a friend or what they posted, that I just kind of had to live with that consequence. But for me, I felt like that was definitely worth the risk. And as I've done that the last year, I felt like the kids in my group have opened up more, and I've been kind of exposed to a lot of stuff. I've kind of better understand where they come from. So think about maybe your own hesitations. You know, why is it that you maybe don't want to join MySpace or Facebook? You know, one of the biggest challenges for us at Bel Air is, you know, depending on the estimate, you know, anywhere from, they say, 55 to 60% of our people are involved in the entertainment industry. You know, so you got 3,000 people on Sunday. You know, more than half of them are involved in acting and music and behind the scenes. And so we had this MySpace page in the young adult community that was started by someone in the young adult community. The pastors didn't even know about it. And you got people trying to get in the entertainment world who are actors and models, and they're posting photos that are a little over the top and a little bit crazy. And the pastors, I remember all the pastors getting together in the office saying, we have to stop this. We have to stop this MySpace page. And I'm like, you can't. You guys didn't start it. People can do what they want. The only thing you can do is put a disclaimer, you know, maybe saying we don't support or, you know, endorse everything on this page. And so that, I know a year ago that was a messy situation for us to be in as Bel Air. It's like, how do we control content? We realized we couldn't control content. And so we, as some of myself, and a couple of other pastors realized it's better for us to be in the midst with our people and hopefully transform the culture within than to simply sit on the sidelines and throw our hands in the air. So be asking yourself that question. Maybe what is it that's keeping you from going online? And ultimately, I thought, you know, it's worth putting my reputation at risk, whatever that means, to be online with my students and for them to know I'm going to stand with them and work with them. And the fifth step, I put transforming communication. And the question was, what can you do in your students' social network to help transform their environment and communication? How can you communicate Christ to your students online? And I started thinking about this. When you're online, a social network, you're basically, you know, there's a couple ways that we communicate who we are. We communicate who we are by the words we use. So, for example, my college ministry, we have this, you know, purpose statement and vision statement, and I have announcements, and I have these emails that I send. And so I'm saying something about who we are by just the words that I send out, by the things that I print. But there's a second style of communication, is that we communicate who we are by just kind of who we act online and what kind of person I am. So as a college pastor, I see it as my role is that I'm hopefully trying to transform the communication by what kind of content I post, what kind of blogs I post online. But hopefully I'm saying something about myself and about what type of person Christ wants us to be by how I act online. What kind of things do I engage in? What kind of photos do I post or not post? You know, what kind of arguments do I get in or not get in? You know, what kind of groups do I join or not join? So there's these two levels of communication that are happening. And I think we have a great opportunity to go online and help transform the communication in the community. You know, I go back to the idea I could stay on the sideline and watch all my students on Facebook and MySpace and have no impact at all. Or I can join in their midst, hopefully lead within and help transform the communication, hopefully make the group to be something better than maybe it possibly was. And so these five steps, I think, are kind of important steps in my own personal journey, how I've come to that place. And I think five important steps just kind of for us to wrestle with and to ask questions of. One of the things that I want to talk about, and I want to go a little more practical here, is let me ask a question to you. How many have you have a MySpace or Facebook page? Okay, a lot of you, quite a few. I'll say off the top, I don't use MySpace almost anymore. It got a little too out of control just for me even. I couldn't control the spam and the ads that were coming across my page, and it was a little nuts. And I went over to Facebook, and one reason I went to Facebook too is all my college students had migrated off of MySpace into Facebook. One of the things that working in youth culture you find is you can never stay ahead of the cool curve. So by the time you as a pastor or as a leader find out something's cool, the students have already moved on to something completely different. And so MySpace was no longer cool, and I was still on it, and I had to move over to Facebook. So I love Facebook. I think it's an amazing tool. I'm not going to go into a lot of the technical stuff of it because it's pretty simple to figure out. You don't have to have any technical skills. to have a Facebook page. But I want to maybe address some other things about maybe how you can make it more effective for your ministry. One of the great things about Facebook that MySpace doesn't have or other sites is they've allowed other outside designers to come in and to create these applications that you can download on your Facebook page. So currently, I haven't looked at the latest number, but there's almost, I think, 6,000 applications you can download on your Facebook page that you can have right there on your homepage. So when you're thinking about the people you work with, and I want to pause and say, I know this is saying, you know, talking about youth culture and youth ministry, I would say that half of my friends on Facebook now are people ages 35 and over who have gone over to Facebook and are seeing it as a networking tool. So we're not just talking about a youth thing here. But imagine, if you will, if you had everything in your life that was important to you kind of on your screen, on one page. That's what Facebook is. If you're a college student or a high school student, junior high, or a person, you have your friends there, you have your emails there, your messages, you have your favorite music, you have your photos there, you have anything that you can imagine right there on your page. So it's like carrying your whole life around with you. And that's hard to beat. And I think that's one of the draws of Facebook. So for example, I don't get any emails to my church account almost anymore. I mean, I still get them, but they're dying off. Everyone sends me a message through Facebook because their life is there. Why would they go to the church? Why would they go to the church website or the church email when they can just address everything on Facebook, you know, right there? So let me just log in. I just kind of want to show you a couple things that I think are really great about doing ministry in this generation. You know, you think at a blogging conference, the network speed would be much, much faster. And that's not a knock at God BlogCon. I can't get it out there at all either. As this is loading up, I had a couple questions from some people. No, it'll work. I don't know what's going on there. If you ever speak up front, it's really nerve-wracking because I went through and checked all my material, make sure there wasn't anything crazy that popped up on our pages. This is actually one of the newest features to Facebook, and this was a huge controversy, but it's called the news feed. So when you log in, it automatically shows what everyone in your network has been doing in the last hour, last 5 minutes. So every time someone in your network updates something, you get a news feed of that. So for example, I have 300 friends in my network. Anytime they do something to their homepage, it tells me on the news feed what they're doing. So if they posted a new photo or posted something new, it's all right there. And Facebook originally was only for college students. And so when they opened it up to people outside of college, there was a huge uproar. They were really upset about it. And they actually started a group against Facebook on Facebook, you know, because they were so upset. And then when they started this news feed, they were really upset because they could no longer hide the things that they were doing. But now everyone kind of loves it because it's like opening up your daily paper and seeing what all your friends are doing. And so when you open up your news feed, this is kind of basically what you get. I see what everyone has done, you know, and this could go on for 5, 6, 7 pages in the last hour. You know, I can see who posts things, I mean, who makes comments. And then I go to my individual profile. And I'm going to address some of the questions I got a little bit earlier. I'm pretty careful, just to be honest, too, about what I post. I don't talk about my daughter or wife very much. I don't give personal information. I don't even tell them I'm out of town usually, because just leaving people at home alone and stuff. But this is my own homepage, you know, and this gives me a little mini feed, tells me everything that I've done, tells me who my friends are. It tells me what kind of friends I have in common with other friends. Personal information, you know, education. I added a visual bookshelf, tells you what kind of books I'm reading right now, what other books people in my network are reading, what recommendations they make. I can put what kind of music I like down, all kinds of stuff. I'm a runner, so I have an online chart that tracks how many miles I run. I have a blog feed, shows what everyone who I'm friends with in the blogging world, all their posts that they've updated lately, so tells you what kind of cities I've visited, all kinds of amazing stuff. So I guess what I'm trying to tell you is that this is their world right here. This is a generation. Their whole life is right here online. And for us to work in the church organizations to say, you know, let them kind of be their online thing, or I'm not going to get involved online in Facebook or MySpace because I don't like it, or I can't control the content. I think we're missing a huge opportunity to do some great ministry to them and to be a part of the world and to engage in some really cool tools here. On the left side, I have our groups here, a couple of groups that I'm joined with, and this is our Bel Air group. And I just kind of want to tell you how I've used it effectively. One of the things that I've realized over the years is to get everyone's email and to make a list every year of an Excel sheet and to email them doesn't work anymore, at least, because everyone's moving all the time and they're changing emails. And so I no longer send an email out to anybody. I just message everybody through Facebook. I send a message out every week with all of our information. And I can go over here and I can message all of the members in this church group. And so they get a weekly email from me that lists everything. And if they aren't a part of the network, then you miss out on some of the information, unfortunately. Or those of you who like Evite, you can create an event. So I can go online. I no longer print flyers for our retreats anymore or for outreach projects. Everything is done online, which saves money and paper as well. But I go online and I create an event. And when I create an event, everyone in my network gets an invite to that event. And it shows me who's coming, who's not coming, who might come, you know, all these things. And so it's a great tool in that way. One of the questions people asked me earlier was, I have a group, but how do I make it more effective? And that's a huge challenge. One of the things about having a group online is that you can't download some of the third-party applications Facebook has created for groups yet. So I called Facebook. I have a student now who works for Facebook as their company is growing really big now. And I said, I'd like to put a calendar on my group page. And they said, well, we haven't had that third-party application created yet. So what I've done is, you know, I put links to my blog here. I put links to our website. I put my email address. I put when our group meets. I put what hours we have a coffee house now at church. You know, I put our whole speaking time online, who's speaking what weeks. So basically, our whole lectionary is online. All the information they can find all the way up to June of 2006, basically. So it's online. They can post photos of retreats online. We post videos. Anyone can upload a video from a retreat without going through me. I posted a blog. Someone was live blogging from the conference just a few minutes ago, or a couple hours ago, and they got a quote from a guy from the WordPress platform who said, you should be careful what you write because it's online permanently. And he made a comment about how he goes back when he hires someone and reads their last 6 months of archives of blogging or Facebook or MySpace to make sure it's an appropriate hire. So I just posted that when I was over here listening to one of the talks, and I post all of my blogs online, so all my students automatically get to their newsfeed what I'm blogging about. So I've decided if they're going to get this information, what is relevant to them? What kind of things can I post about college students that they would see, that they find relevant and important? And so I have more of a target audience now. And I would say that my blog traffic has been driven up by Facebook because now all my blogs are posted online. And there's a whole new group of people who don't read blogs, who are just involved in social networking. And then we have a discussion board. Students can go on and invite people to concerts. Our group right now has 155 members. You know, and then there's the wall where you can post different things. And that's how we've used it. One of the great things about Facebook and MySpace that I've done, for example, is to advertise our college ministry, to advertise an event. I work mainly with kids from LMU, USC, and UCLA. And so the Daily Bruin paper called me up and said, hey, we'd like you to run a full-page advertisement in the Daily Bruin. And I'm like, okay, how much is it going to cost? They said, well, it would be like $1,200 for a one-day ad. And I said, are you kidding me? $1,200 to run a one-day ad. So instead, I went online and I sent 100,000 flyers out to UCLA students for $180 on Facebook. And so, for example, you can target market through advertising. You can go online and you can create a flyer and you can say what age group you want. And so for me, I chose the school network of just each school, UCLA, for example. And I said, I want this flyer to go 100,000 times to everyone from UCLA who clicks on their Facebook page. And so the first 100,000 people for a week straight, every day, who click on Facebook, get an ad on the side of our college ministry, inviting them to our kickoff. And I did the same for LMU and USC. So by the time all is said and done, I ran 280,000 ads for a total of about $500. You know, you can't beat that. You know, the one ad on at the Daily Bruin for $1,200 versus 180,000 ads for $500. It's great advertising. So think about that in terms of your own ministry. You can target advertise to your groups or church events or mission trips. And it's a great thing. One of the other questions that someone asked me was, I have these things written down. They asked about blogs. And let me just give you an example. If you click on applications here, and you write to browse more applications, you can see how many applications there are. So there's 7,600 applications you can download to your Facebook page currently. And you can find what there are, you know, 270 applications on dating or whatever. You know, there's 3,000 applications just for fun. So someone asked me about blogs. Well, if you go to applications and type in RSS feeds, you'll see how many different applications that we'll download here. Let me see if that works. And you can download any of these. Let's see how many pages there are. There's one page. So there's like 15 different RSS feeds that you can just download in your application and upload it to your blogs. And so this applications page is great. And as I get farther and farther along in ministry, and different people say, well, I think the social networking idea is going to die out or it's just a fad. I don't think it is at all. I think our website is going to die and fade soon, and I only go to a website to update it as a homepage so people can go to our website and see, join our Facebook group. That's all I do. That's all I use our page for, is a starting point for people who are used to going to look at websites. And so I guess as I think back about this last year, and I said I've changed views 180 degrees, I know not everybody would come to the same place that I've come to, and some of you have. But as somebody who is working with youth and working with young adults, and as I said, as I look at the age of people getting on Facebook, the age is increasing. People in their 40s and 50s and older are getting on Facebook, and they're joining these networks. I think it's where we in church and ministry actually need to kind of plant down and do some hard work there. And I think we can really transform the culture inside a social network and help ask the right questions and challenge people in certain areas. And as far as just how we communicate, I haven't found a tool that is more effective and easier to use than Facebook. You know, I used to spend a couple hours a week plus on my website trying to do coding and do all this stuff. And Facebook, it takes about 5 minutes to update everything every week. And it's effective. And people can join your group or get out of your group. And so you're not sending messages to people who don't want to be a part of that group. One of the things that I have learned, a hard lesson recently, is that just because you can message all the members in your network, it's not good to send them a bunch of messages all the time. So you have to be thoughtful in how you do that. That's why I only send out one message a week to our students. So they know each week on a Tuesday morning, they'll probably get, you know, a news feed from me. I guess at this time, because I'm bad, I'm a pastor, and I can ramble pointlessly off topic here, I wanted to open it up and see if you guys had any questions or thoughts or discussions or anything maybe to input into the discussion, or if you agree or disagree with some of the things I've written on your paper there about getting involved in students' lives or about being exposed to students' lives or anything like that. Does anyone have any thoughts or agreements or disagreements? With objections from who?
Your leadership.
My leadership, there's been no objections. Well, let me take that back. Student leadership, no objections. Church leadership, some objections. And I found most of them don't even know kind of what's going on in the youth culture, so I've just better to ask for forgiveness sometimes, I realize, than to ask for permission. Is that what I've heard? I guess as being a podcast, I shouldn't say that. They have kind of actually applauded me for trying to go in some new directions with trying to communicate effectively, but it takes a little longer to get them on board, you know, with some of the new technology. And ultimately, it came down to a conversation was that you can't control content, and they're going to be there anyways. So the question before us is, do we want to at least be where they're at and try to have an impact in their lives, or do we want to close our eyes and bury our head in the sand and let them do whatever they want to do anyways. And for me, too, it's an opportunity, as Mark talked about, working with your congregation and blogging, it's an opportunity for me to be involved in their lives outside of the 1 to 2 hours a week that I get to spend with them. And so I think the church has responded well. And as far as the student leadership and the young adult leadership I've worked with, it's great for them because they all can give an opinion and give a voice. And so with social networking, you're empowering thousands of users to add content. And so you're not solely responsible for the content, which is also great because it's a lot of work to create all that content. So I would say it hasn't been that big of a challenge recently. I would say with Facebook, it's widely accepted a lot easier, at least in some circles, than MySpace now. I don't get the spam from like a porn star in my message box in Facebook like I was getting in MySpace. Like, there's just a whole degree of difference as far as the content, I think, on MySpace and Facebook. And so I'm about to get rid of our whole MySpace account on that as well. So what else? Any other thoughts or questions? Yeah. Well, I think it makes you more real because when I'm a pastor and I'm teaching or I'm up front, they see me as this kind of untouchable pastor, no matter how much time I spend with them. But all of a sudden, when they saw me online in their communities, there was like this more real humanness quality to me. Oh, and Rhett likes this music or reads this book. Like, he's this real person. And so the walls tend to come down to a degree, and it's pretty shocking what they will confide in you or ask questions in you and stuff. There was a question behind you, I think. I was just doing some research, and the thing with this whole, I was actually kind of laughing when I came into this conference, cause I'm like, I don't know what I'm doing here, because I feel like I'm not an expert any means, because everything changes so fast. But Facebook demographics were much younger, at least to begin with, because it's only a college network. And then over the last year, they've opened up to it's gotten older, but MySpace traditionally has always had an older demographic. But obviously, the majority of people online in these networks right now, are the age 15 to probably early 30s. But I'm reading more and more articles online about people in their 40s, 50s, and 60s wanting to be part of a group online and join these networks. And it's a good way to have opportunities in business and work and church. And I've also been reading some discussion recently online about how Facebook and MySpace breaks down as far as racial and socioeconomic levels as well. Facebook was originally targeted at Harvard as an online social network, open to other Ivy League colleges along the East Coast and other schools. And so there's been this discussion that Facebook originally had a more educated kind of college audience, work-related, and MySpace was more driven by entertainment and people with their music and acting careers. And so there's been this kind of interesting discussion, not only about age, but who's going to what sites and everything. So, but that's still in discussion. Like, if you go online and Google these articles, I mean, there's a million different opinions right now, I think, about the directions that they're going to go. There's some discussion that Facebook will eventually overcome MySpace, but I don't know. There's just so many people on MySpace right now. Okay.
And that's up from 36% a year ago. So the two largest age groups are 18 to 24, although that's shrinking, and 35 and over.
Yeah, and the other thing that's fun intriguing is that with Facebook, I don't get a request to be people's friends that I don't know. And that's been discussion about that online as well, where MySpace, you get hundreds of requests by people you've never met. And there's a lot of advertising and marketing promotion of who they are and their product and stuff. Facebook, I've never had someone approach me who I actually don't know personally or through ministry. And so there's definitely a different feel when you're online with who you come into contact with.
Yeah.
What, when you get people who don't know? I don't know. That's a good question. I guess, you know, like, for example, if you blog, you'll get some people who want to be your friends because they read your blog, and so they find you on a network, and they want to communicate that way. But, yeah, I guess ultimately when an online social network, one of the things is you can't control who's online and what kind of content. So I do think to a degree eventually it will become a lot like MySpace in the way that all kinds of people want to befriend you just to befriend you and to say I have 500 friends or 1,000 friends. And also I've noticed on Facebook too recently some of the ads have become a little more crude than they were in the past. So as more people influx to Facebook, I'm sure that will change the makeup of it quite a bit. But that's a good question. I don't know. And I'm sure people at Facebook are fearful. They don't want it to look exactly like MySpace or other sites as well. Someone else have a question?
Do you think that since the age demographics
are skewed older now, that like more mid-school students get the learn and start using it too? Yeah, in fact, right now we went from our college Facebook to the junior high started Facebook, the high school started Facebook, the young adult started Facebook. And like 10 other people who aren't pastors are related to Bel Air as far as being on like leadership. So like just a lay person, they started their own Facebook page related to Bel Air. So you'll have multiple Bel Air pages, maybe all with different purposes and messages and relations. Yeah. Yeah, and we're kind of bypassing our website now, which has been an issue in our communications department. No one goes to our website people anymore and says, hey, can you update our group? Everyone's just creating their own groups on their own time. And that's been an issue for our website. How do you make our website relevant? But everyone, yeah, people are going on and creating their own groups. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you can, when you target advertise, you can break down to age, demographic, location, region, network. So it's very targeted specific. Yeah. Do I want 10,000 flyers a day? Do I want 150,000 flyers a day? Do I want it at this school or that school? Do I want it in the Los Angeles network or the Washington, D.C. network? Do I want it in only people with a religious affiliation or a tech affiliation? So it's a big both. You can do a big ad page or you can do like a border down the side. And if you go to advertisers down here at the bottom, it's real easy. You can walk through it and they'll talk about social ads, advanced targeting, all this stuff. And if you're a person who's a developer, you can develop an application for Facebook, you know, and have it added to the Facebook platform. Wasn't it recently I was read this guy was offered $1 billion for Facebook and he turned it down? Is that correct? Yeah. $1 billion and he turned it down. Yeah, he sold a piece of it. So, I mean, yeah, he's not a small piece. Dustin, I'm aware I'm probably out of time, right? It's 2:00. So let me take one last question. Anyone have any questions? Right. Right. I think that when it comes to flattening of hierarchy and like this idea of being kind of a renegade and how do you control that, you're able to control it to a degree by the sense you're willing to be involved in that community. If I decided as a pastor I wasn't going to be involved in my college Facebook group, then they don't care what I have to say because I'm not part of that group. So I realized once I entered into their group, I was able to better moderate because they still saw me as a college pastor even though there wasn't this like hierarchy. So I think that's why we have to think about as people in churches and organizations, if we do get involved, we can better help steer the direction and how we minister in those places and stuff. I'll be here all day and tomorrow. If you guys have questions or thoughts just about Facebook or MySpace or want me to show you anything more technical, like I said, I'm not that technical. This is really easy. or you have questions or disagreements, let me know, because I'd love for this discussion to build. I'm going to be posting some stuff on my blog over the next few weeks about this issue and hopefully get some feedback from people. So, anyways, I appreciate your time very much.